south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, here's something surprising I'm sure you didn't know, but first, let's start out with something you do know to get some background on this. You always hear me talking about getting your plan B going, that is, getting residency in a foreign country. Then waiting out for a while, usually 5 years, then applying for your passport and nationality. Then you'd have two passports. It's called planting a second flag. And some people take that even further and get a third passport or a third flag, etc., etc. But really, a second passport's enough. Enough for what, you might be wondering? Well, as Big Brother, Uncle Sam, TSA, etc. get more and more restrictive on your travel plans, after all, they want to keep the sheep in the barn for shearing, right? Not to mention every adult in the first world commits at least 3 felonies a day, whether they know it or not. Most of the times, they have no idea. That means anytime the government wants, they could show up at your door and say, hey, you're not going anywhere. Or, we just locked up your bank accounts. Why? Because we've got a list of felonies you've committed, you see. That's why I always have to laugh when naive first world people say, why are you being so secretive, Johnny? Why are you trying to be anonymous? Look at me, I got nothing to hide. Ha ha ha. So why would your nice Uncle Sam restrict your travel plans? Well, you might just show up on too many lists. Maybe you bought too much prepper stuff or made too many unpleasant tweets about the government or your senators or your presidents. Or maybe you just didn't like the way the last TSA agent probed your anus and you mouthed off to him. Well, you might think you're still a first-class, upstanding U.S. citizen, but you've been committing all those felonies, at least 3 a day. And you know, if you're convicted of a felony or even brought up on charges, your passport and travel privileges can be revoked. So then what? Well, you're stuck in the good old US of A indefinitely. And when the feces hits the ventilator up there and the reset button gets pushed, what are you going to do? You got a neighborhood plan B worked out? You going to go to Uncle Harry's farm in upstate Wisconsin? Sit it out with some bearded mountain men, maybe? Oh, I forgot. You got 10 pallets of prepper stuff in the basement, right? And you're going to hole up down there. All I could say is, good luck with that. Though I'm not saying it's a bad idea to be a prepper. But most preppers, at least the astute, intelligent ones, sometimes while they're inventorying all the junk they've got stored in the basement, they have this little epiphany. Kind of like that old Twilight Zone episode where the guy built himself a bomb shelter in the backyard, completely stuck. And of course, you can't be digging a giant hole in your backyard and pouring concrete without the neighbors noticing, right? And the day came when the air raid sirens went off. And guess what? He had his whole damn frantic neighborhood pounding on his bunker door. And you know, there's a lot of realistic and even crazy scenarios on how it's going to go down up in the States during the next big crisis, be it a magnetic pulse from the sun, grid down and all that, big terrorist attack, huge malicious all-out utility hack maybe, financial crisis, whatever. And when any of that stuff goes down, even if you get a couple of days notice, first thing the government's gonna do is restrict travel. Unless, of course, you've got a second passport. Then you're also a citizen of another country too. And Uncle Sam will have absolutely no control over your movements as long as you're traveling on that other passport. So if your idea of a great plan B is like mine, you've already visited a few Latin countries on your own, got boots on the ground, made some contacts, possibly have some land, have rented an apartment, or even own a house or a condo, whatever. And then if you have a second passport or even residency in that foreign country, at the first sniff of trouble up in the States, you could head to your nice, comfortable Plan B location and watch the first world go down from a couple of thousand miles away. So it's an absolute guarantee that when the feces hits the ventilator once again up in the States, within a very short time, travel restrictions will be imposed. So if all you've got is a U.S. passport, you're stuck. Though maybe you want to be stuck. You want to tough it out in the old neighborhood no matter what kind of crap comes out. Maybe it'll work out. Maybe you're a great survivor. But what about the women, the children, and the old-timers in the family? That's when denial kicks in. It's a great defense mechanism. Who wants to think about what's going to happen to the wife, kids, and grandma when the reset button gets pushed? However, if you and your immediate family members have another passport, you get the idea. So with that second passport, you've got pretty much a get-out-of-dodge-free card. Though to get that process going, no matter what foreign country you pick, you have to get your residency first. And most times, you'll start out with temporary residency, last a year or two, switch to permanent residency. Then you run your 5 years and go for that second passport and second nationality. By the way, once you've got a second passport, that doesn't affect your first passport. The U.S. government, you know, allows multiple nationalities. And as far as your second passport country, your new country, once you've got their passport, your new country can never revoke or take your citizenship away from you. Unless, and this is true with every country, even the U.S., you commit some kind of act of treason. You know, like stealing government secrets and selling them to a foreign power. Which is about as likely as running into your pastor or family priest in a gay bar. Well, not that likely. But I digress, as usual. You know, it's always preferable to start out with permanent residency, bypassing temporary residency if you can. Because with temporary residency, you're just in a holding pattern, waiting for your permanent residency to kick in. And that means extra dough and an extra trip or two down to sign paperwork and stuff. Which prompts gringos to say to me all the time, Johnny, I don't want temporary residency. I'm going to go straight to permanent. Tell me, how do I do that and what's the difference? Well, you see, in most Latin countries, temporary residency exists for people, that is, foreigners, like people from the States, who don't want to spend a great deal of money or invest in their new country. Or perhaps they don't have money to invest. With most temporary residency applications, you don't have to prove your income. Though in most all cases, you do have to have a lawyer expedite you through that process because you'll need him or her as what they call a fiador. Basically, he'll be your sponsor, someone that's vouching for your character. That's why it's almost impossible to get this stuff going on your own unless your Spanish is really good. Or if you have a Latino or Latina girlfriend, boyfriend, or marriage partner who is a citizen of that Latin country who can be your fiador and hold your hand through that process. And in reality, that situation is not very common, except for gringos and expats who've been living in a Latin country for a long time. So again, with temporary residency, you don't have to have proof of income. Now, to skip all that and go right to permanent residency, that makes for a tougher application process. And it's getting tougher all the time. That's why sometimes when you're going through the process, which does take some months, you get a phone call from your Latin lawyer saying, man, you got lucky. You got in right under the wire. They just changed this part or that part, making it tougher for the next gringos coming along. And you wonder, how does that happen? Because every Latin country really does love to have gringos flooding in. I mean, we bring talent, jobs, and money, right? Things that third world countries are in very short supply of. So then why are Latin American countries making their residency requirements harder and harder? Well, a number of Latin lawyers have told me it's all about pressure from the U.S. government. Aha. And why do you think that's so? Again, it goes back to the fact that Uncle Sam does not want the sheep leaving the barn. So then you might be thinking, well, how does the U.S. have that much influence over the immigration policies of a sovereign Latin country? Well, on paper, they're sovereign. But you know how the U.S. government constantly interferes in the affairs of other countries. Again, it's all about the money. And besides that, it's not beyond any U.S. president or government to force a coup and the change of regimes. They've done that many times. If you don't play ball with the U.S., first, the money stops. And if that doesn't work, regime change. But you knew that already. Great example is this huge failed war on drugs. With billions of U.S. dollars flowing every year into South and Central American countries. So if the U.S. government wants to press an issue and the Latin government doesn't play ball, well, what do you think? So just a little warning here. I can tell you for a fact that every Latin country's residency programs are being tightened up little by little, which begs the question, how? In what ways? Well, for example, you might find out if you're going for residency in a country like Nicaragua, suddenly, an immigration edict comes down and says that to maintain your residency, you gotta be in the country 3 months a year, whereas previously there was no such time restriction at all. And man, does that throw a wrench into the works for so many gringos and expats. Think about it. If you've got permanent residency and you're waiting out that five-year period for that passport, can you afford to take 3 months off from whatever you're doing up in the States and come down and wait it out just to fulfill that requirement? Do it 5 years in a row? Oh, and here's another way governments can stick it to you by changing the rules. For example, many Latin countries will let you go straight to permanent residency if you deposit, let's say, $50,000 in a local bank CD. Your immigration lawyer has told you about that, and that's the way you're going to go. Only, let's say you put off your plan to start your permanent residency for a couple of months because you got to get things organized up in the States. So the time comes and you're ready. You wire some money down to your lawyer, or you come down yourself and go to the bank with your lawyer to get the process going, and you find out it's $100,000 now. Or maybe they eliminated that stipulation altogether, and now you have to actually buy a property, a condo, house, land, whatever, for $50,000 or $100,000. And that's the new requirement. See how things change? Now, for gringos and expats who are getting pensions or Social Security, as it turns out, the residency programs in about half of the Latin countries allow you to apply for permanent residency if your Social Security or pension income is only $1,000 or $1,200 a month. There's even one or two Latin countries that let you slide through at $750 a month. Then there's another group of Latin countries will only let you apply if you can prove pension, Social Security, or trust income of over $2,000 a month. Two big examples there, Dominican Republic and Costa Rica. Oh, and some Latin countries will accept rental income to fulfill the amount. Now, it's supposed to be lifetime monthly income from an outside source, but you know, once you've got the paperwork, and how are they ever going to know if you sold a rental unit up in the States? This is the third world, you know. Yep, there's a lot of tricks and a lot of flexibility here. That's why you have to have a good Latin lawyer. Now, for example, just a few years back, all you needed was $1,000 a month outside income to apply for permanent residency in Costa Rica. Now it's $2,500. Like I said, things change, and sometimes even your own Latin lawyer gets no advance warning. That said, all you Plan B gonna-bes and wannabes sitting on your thrones watching Game of Thrones, this is no time for procrastination. Let the Latins have their mañana time. You get off your butt and start that Plan B while you still have options. Oh, and by the way, speaking of the Dominican Republic, a lot of people say, hey, I hear they got a great, cheap, and easy residency program. Well, it may be easy, but it ain't cheap. For example, if you hooked up with a Latin lawyer thinking about getting your residency in a place like Honduras, Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, you're probably going to have to pay your lawyer between $1,000 and $2,000 to get the whole process going from start to finish. But in the DR, the Dominican Republic, you're going to pay at least $3,500. About double. So by far the easiest way to go directly to permanent residency is to either have Social Security income, pension income, or a trust income that meets the requirements of your selected Latin country. By the way, when you're retired and getting a pension or Social Security, Latin countries deem that a pensionado residency. You're called a pensionado. So what's the difference between that and regular permanent residency? Well, there are pluses and minuses to pensionado residency, depending on which Latin country you're applying in. Now, you really have to look out with these pensionado residencies. Although, if you qualify in most Latin countries to let you bring a car in, or you can buy a car in that country, and they won't charge you VAT tax. That could save you a couple $1,000 each time. And you can do that every 5 years. And in most Latin countries, if you qualify for pensionado residency, you can also bring a container full of household items from the States without paying import taxes or VAT either. Plus, in many Latin countries, you get all kinds of senior discounts too. However, when you look at a Latin country's website and it says you get senior discounts, and they have a list, including public transportation discounts, that would be subways, chicken buses, urban bus lines, etc., you'll find once you get to that Latin country, not all businesses, pharmacies, or transportation companies are on board with that. So what you read on embassy websites is not necessarily the way it is in real life. Well, and here's another thing most people don't know. With pensionado residency, you can't legally work or have a job. Not on the books, anyway. Because they're expecting you and your pension and Social Security money, whatever, to come into their country, and you're going to spend that money, not earn money from within the country and spend it. However, these days, that's not much of an issue, since most gringos and expats who are working or have businesses in Latin countries are on the internet making money. And really, why let the local government know about that unless it really takes off and you absolutely have to? If you do, you'll have to get a tax number, file taxes, and pay taxes. And in most Latin countries, except for maybe Costa Rica, Colombia, Brazil, and Panama, they really have no law enforcement-style tax police. No, it's not even the IRS light. It's more like the IRS in a coma. That's why so many gringos and expats say, hip, hip, hooray. However, do consult your lawyer about that stuff. He's got a business, so he pays at least some taxes, so he knows all the tricks and angles and will advise you and keep you out of trouble. I repeat, Latin governments, except for the four countries I just mentioned, do not have agents that'll knock on your door or come into your office and do audits. That's all first world stuff. Anyway, if you got pensionado residency, you won't be able to work legally. But get this, For example, if your great dream was always to have an Italian restaurant, little hotel, bed and breakfast, whatever, even if you're a pensionado and cannot work in that country, you could still do it, and you won't be breaking any local laws. Say what? Here's how you do it. Let's say it's a restaurant. You get yourself an SA corporation through your local Latin lawyer. The restaurant's set up in the corporate name. You have a corporate bank account, corporate debit, Visa cards, whatever. Pay your staff with corporate checks. But you, the owner, the proprietor, are not on salary. You don't write yourself a check every week or every month. So how do you get paid? Well, guess who owns that corporate bank account? You. The possibilities are endless. Is that sinking in? Once again, I'm not suggesting or advising you do anything illegal. Remember, the name of this show is The Expat Files Living in Latin America. I'm just giving you a heads up on what a lot of gringos and expats end up doing. Then there are other gringos and expats who are used to doing everything by the letter of the law. 95% of them are Canadians. Meanwhile, all the other Latin businessmen are scamming the government every which way but loose. Why not? They figure politicians steal from them, well, they'll steal right back. Of course, you know, for Latin males, tax evasion, soccer, binge drinking, and cheating on your wife are the national pastimes. All right, let me give you another tip. Unless you absolutely have your heart set on a brick-and-mortar business of some kind, restaurant, B&B, whatever, you really should focus on starting an internet business. Why? Well, for one thing, you won't have to deal with the bureaucracy, employees, labor regulations, security, inventory. It's just so much easier. Plus, you can generally do it from a room in your own house. So compared to a brick-and-mortar business, it's a no-brainer. Of course, it's true. Brick-and-mortar businesses always have an internet component. I mean, there's marketing and advertising and all that. And it's certainly true that the younger you are when you come down here and start that plan B, the more likely it is you find a niche and get that internet business going. And conversely, the older you are when you come down, especially retired people or people near retirement, they're much more likely to do a brick-and-mortar thing. It's all about the comfort zone. Fact is, if you were of that generation born with an iPhone in your hand, doing things, almost everything on the internet is part of your DNA. However, for the older crowd used to reading real physical books, newspapers, and checking out ads in the yellow pages, well, a lot of them have been dragged into the internet culture, kicking and screaming. We all know some people like that. All right, the last thing I want to say about this pensionado residency thing, and the reason why I'm bringing it up is because I get a lot of emails about it, is that there's another catch-22. In most Latin countries, and I'll repeat, in most Latin countries, if you have pensionado residency, it will not, in 5 years or in any length of time, lead to a passport and nationality. In other words, in most Latin countries, you will remain a pensionado in that country forever. And really, the point is, if you're going to have a nice solid plan B, you want to end up with a second passport at one point or other. Why? I repeat, whatever happens up in the States, it's your get-out-of-dodge-free card. So if you're checking out pensionado plans, make sure they lead to a passport. Now, here's something strange, but very interesting. Did you ever hear of the EB-5 investor visa? I don't think so. Well, it's the United States version of a pensionado or permanent residency program based on investing in the U.S. In other words, if you're a foreigner of means and have a clean police report and $500,000 and approximately another $100,000 for legal fees, you get automatic permanent residency in the good old U.S. of A. That's permanent residency for you, for qualified members of your family, spouse, etc., and all your kids under age 21. So what does EB-5 stand for? Employment-based fifth preference. Say what? It says in the documentation, in order to qualify for this permanent residency program that leads in 10 years to nationality and passport, you have to invest from $500,000 to $1 million. In a business or investment that creates no fewer than 10 new American jobs. But wait a minute, it said at first you only need $500,000 to get started with this residency program. It's only $500,000 if you invest in certain targeted high unemployment areas like the Rust Belt in the Midwest, rural areas, and places like the South Side of Chicago, old vomit-sold stomping grounds, and Detroit. Now, I'm pointing this out to show you that it's not only Latin countries that have so-called investor visas or investment residency program. The U.S. does too. In fact, when people hear there are certain countries like Dominica, Nevis Antigua, Barbuda, and a few Pacific Island countries actually selling passports outright. They instantly think there's something sleazy going on, something that doesn't pass the smell test. By the way, I've been hearing that Hillary Clinton never passed the smell test. And I'm not talking about her dastardly illegal stuff. I'm talking about she just basically stinks of BO, locker rooms, and septic tanks. Hey, I'm not making this up. FBI agents, White House staffers, bodyguards, and stuff have written and mentioned it in various books and articles. But I digress, man. Did I digress? So anyway, a lot of small, mostly island countries will outright sell passports, usually for around $150,000 to $500,000. And just this last year, when those big hurricanes whipped through, like the one that wiped out Puerto Rico, a few of the other island countries that got hit lowered their instant passport prices quite a bit. In other words, they're broke, and these passport programs bring in a lot of money. Don't you know it's always about the money? Now, if that sort of thing rubs you the wrong way, seems kind of skanky, well, you know, it's not publicized much at all, but the U.S. sells instant passports too, but it'll cost you in the neighborhood of around $2 to $5 million. So if you're super rich, you can set up a meeting with a U.S. senator, congressman, or at a U.S. consulate, whip out your bank statements and show them your mega balance. And you'll soon find out just how easy it is to cut through months, even years, of residency and passport red tape. Just ask that sack of dung George Soros and puss bag Carlos Sim. Wouldn't you love to see the list of all the maggot balls that got their U.S. passport that way? Which just goes to show that practically everything in this world is for sale, except maybe integrity. Though I have my doubts about that, too. So, talking about that plan B, how far are you along on yours? Now, why do you think a couple of times a year I hold my expat insider seminars? To help a select group of people to get their plan Bs on steroids. Because, as attendees will tell you, you get the fire hose treatment for almost a solid week. Intense morning lectures followed by afternoon and evening boots-on-the-ground excursions to places that will truly amaze you. You'll meet people and visit places the average person just coming down by himself wouldn't even know existed. But that's the whole point. My upcoming Expat Insider Seminar starts Saturday, July 7th, and goes through Thursday, July 12th. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link for full sign-up information, early bird discount details, and all the information you'll need to sign up for the famous John Galt pre- and post-seminar tours. They're terrific experiences, though optional, of course. Oh, and don't forget, at thenewexpat.com website, you'll find out how you can kill two birds with one stone by starting your Guatemalan residency process, too. If that's your plan B goal, it'll save you a lot of dough and an extra trip in the process. Anyway, just know you can avoid all that if you come down to the seminar and do it all at once. It's a suggestion. It's optional, but a very good thing to do if you can pull it off. Oh, and by the way, just yesterday, I had a little three-hour meeting with the famous Bitcoin Dan. And when he gets rolling, he gets deep into technical territory. I can barely understand him, and I'm, you know, a trained engineer. But he does dole out vast quantities of pearls and gems, too. Stuff I'm telling you, you'll never read about in blogs and such on the internet. And yesterday, he told me two or three quite amazing things. For example, he and a few other software guys uncovered a huge flaw in the Ethereum blockchain. He said, Johnny, everyone's hyped up on these Ethereum smart contracts, and the problem is there are fatal flaws in the software. He was telling me that Ethereum's just got to fail, though it probably won't for a couple of years. He said in most of the altcoin cases, it doesn't matter if they're good or bad or can do anything additional at all, they're all riding the crypto wave, most of them solely on hype. Meanwhile, he said almost no one's actually gone deep into their blockchain software and checked it out. But he has, which is why he calls almost all the other alternative coins shitcoins, including Ethereum. He says the death of Ethereum is not imminent. In fact, he says it could go much, much, much higher. And that smart contract thing, a fantastic idea, and it's going to happen on some blockchains, but not on Ethereum's blockchain. That one's going to blow up in their faces. He also said he would never invest in a single ICO. He said only 1 in 100 have any value at all. He's talking about ICOs now, initial coin offerings. You know, the ones with clever and cute names that show up on annoying pop-up windows about every hour on the hour. Remember, I'm not giving investment advice here. I'm just passing along some information, what one of the Bitcoin and crypto gurus of all time has been telling me. Now, you know, he's invited to speak at Bitcoin and crypto conferences all over the world. He just got invited to speak at one in the Czech Republic. Turns out, he said, There's a group of around 200 crypto millionaires, and all of them have been living completely off their Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. They've gone 100% crypto, no fiat funny money at all. You wonder how that's possible. Well, believe me, it is, and these guys are doing it, flying around the world first class and in private jets, buying up businesses, property, companies, islands, and funding all kinds of projects and startups. Most of these guys, Dan says, are the whales people talk about, though nobody seems to know their real names. And get this, none of them are on Flakebook and Twaddle with their real dads. They're, to a person, 100% against Big Brother in a surveillance state and 100% libertarian. By the way, if you think Bitcoin Dan's just another crypto guy with a very big brain, riddle me this. Do you know of, or have you ever seen anyone on the internet or on any blog who said he's personally met Satoshi, the mythical founder of Bitcoin and the blockchain? He's like the ethereal Yoda of the crypto space, who has more Bitcoin right now than anyone, yet he's never sold a single one. And Bitcoin Dan tells me with 99% certainty that he met and had lunch with the guy in, get this, Guatemala. He said that was about a year ago. Oh, there's a lot to this story, and if you ever meet up with me in person, ask me about it. Naturally, everyone wants to hear Bitcoin Dan's latest predictions. He said he wouldn't doubt one bit that by the end of 2018, Bitcoin's at 30,000. Bitcoin Cash will zoom up too, he says. So will Litecoin, Ethereum, and Dash, but he does not like Litecoin much. Nor, as mentioned previously, does he like Ethereum, but he says they'll follow right on up with Bitcoin. Of course, he hates Ripple. He says it's not even a crypto. But Litecoin? I said, Dan, what's wrong with Litecoin? He said he looked at the underlying software of their blockchain. There hasn't been anyone working on it or updating it for over a year and a half now. He said with any viable currency on the blockchain, there have to be some software engineers always tweaking, fixing, and updating the code. And whereas Bitcoin and Ethereum and a few of the others have lots of guys working on them, the fact that no one's tweaking the software on Litecoin is a bad sign. But Dan believes in the short term, there's going to be a nice big second ride into the stratosphere for all the top 10 cryptos anyway. So if you got the stomach for it, fasten your seatbelts and jump on the roller coaster if you dare. Oh, and I forgot to mention, at my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar, Bitcoin Dan once again will be a featured guest. And I'm trying to corral our favorite expat cryptocurrency mad miner, Expat Oscar. So start making your plans. You won't want to miss this.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.